And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in, whether that be live at Joy 620 or you're listening to the podcast over at investinghope.com, the TuneIn app, iTunes, Google Play, wherever podcasts are found. You can find A Conversation on Life with me, Andrew Wood. So thank you so much for listening. I was out last week. It was Thanksgiving, so I took some time off, and back this week ready to talk about life. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Hope you enjoyed it. We were able to get away and go to my father-in-law's house, which is out in Middle Tennessee, over in Livingston area, over by Cookeville. And he lives, I've been telling people that he lives in the similar way as my dad, kind of out and away from everything, out on a farm. And to the point of, the best way to explain it is, if you had cell phones in the early days, there were moments where you would try to get to maybe go upstairs and stand next to a window to get cell service. Some of you listening are going, that's crazy talk, that we never had to do that. Well, where I grew up and where my father-in-law's house is, if you want to get any kind of cell service, standing next to a window helps just a little bit. But I was able to put the phone away because it wasn't working at all where we were at on Thanksgiving, and actually spend time talking to family and friends. And we enjoyed our time there. The kids enjoyed it. And then we were back, I guess we came back late Thanksgiving night back to Knoxville. So hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Hope you enjoyed it. Maybe some of you went shopping on Black Friday. Maybe some of you are more into Cyber Monday and you shopped online all day yesterday. Hopefully you didn't charge up the credit cards and go into great debt, because that's not really celebrating anything. I mean, you might have got a lot of stuff, but we always want to be careful of that. But hopefully you enjoyed yourself. And now we are full-fledged into the Christmas season, which I've been playing Christmas music since Halloween. But maybe some of you now are just now getting to playing the Christmas music, decorating the houses. We put Christmas trees up in my kids' rooms last night. They each have a tree in each room. And then we have a tree up in the living room. We'll have a tree in the dining room. There may be trees other places, but that's where we're at currently, and going to start that decorating process. Today, though, what I want to do is I want to talk about a recent report that was released that is some good news for the pro-life movement. And for a long time, we have been talking about the abortion issue and saying there's a million abortions every single year in this country. And I've been saying that the greatest country on the planet, it is just not... it's not okay that we provide a million abortions every single year in this country. And so a recent report looking back to 2015 is seeing that number change from a million, and instead of increasing, we have seen a decrease in abortions every single year. And that's a very positive thing. There's a number of reasons for that, and we'll talk about that here in a second. But first, I want to read you an article from the Daily Signal discussing this latest report. So the pro-life movement had a good year in 2015. Fewer American women reported having abortions than any other time since abortion was legalized in 1973. Using the most recent data available, the Abortion Surveillance Report published Wednesday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows 638,169 abortions were reported in 2015, a 2% drop from the 652,000 abortions reported in 2014. This is welcome news. Medicine and technology continue to shape how we view children in the womb and underscores their undeniable humanity. Melanie Israel, a research associate in the DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation, told the Daily Signal. The abortion rate also dropped 0.3 points during the same period, dipping from 12.1 abortions per 1,000 women ages 15 to 44 in 2014 to 11.8 for the same age group in 2015. CDC began surveillance of legal-induced abortions in 1969 and compiles voluntarily reported state data to produce national estimates every year since 1988. The number of legal abortions skyrocketed in the years following the Supreme Court's 1973 ruling in Roe v. Wade, which legalized abortion across the country. This trend reached its climax in the 80s. Since then, the annual number of abortions has been decreasing slowly, rising only slightly between 2006 and 2008, but continuing its downward trend to today. The CDC report did not indicate a reason for the decline in abortions, but Heritage Israel said improved access to pregnancy centers and new legislation at the state level likely contributed. Thousands of pregnancy resource centers across the country provide services, education, supplies, counseling, and compassionate options, including, of course, adoption to women experiencing tough pregnancies who may feel that abortion is their only choice. Pro-life legislators across the country are elected to office and pass legislation that protects the health and safety of women and their unborn children is another reason. The report did not contain data from California, Maryland, or New Hampshire, which opted not to participate. The report also did not present information about deaths from complications arising from legal abortion in 2015. Officials reportedly are analyzing that information now. Six women died as a result of undergoing legal-induced abortion in 2014, according to that year's surveillance report. So we are seeing a decrease in abortions. Now, why is that? Now, some people are going to say, well, it's because of birth control. It's because of the morning after pill. It's because of long-acting birth control. So the implants that you can put in, and they'll work for a few years. But and certainly, some of those play a role in that. I'm not naive. I'm not ignorant. Surely, some of those things play a role. But what I find interesting is, although I will look at as a pro-lifer, as someone that leads a pregnancy center, I will admit that some of those, the birth control and morning after pill and those type of things, are certainly helping in the decline. I'll admit that. But what we don't find is the abortion industry admitting that the work of pregnancy centers is seeing a decline and having a huge impact in the decline of abortions. I mean, it's just truth. That the work of pregnancy centers, close to 3,000 pregnancy centers across the country, providing pregnancy tests, ultrasounds, STD testing and treatment, well woman care, mentoring, educational classes, and material assistance, we are making an impact. We're saving the country tons of money. We're saving the taxpayer tons of money. And we're providing services that are needed with expert care. Many of the women that choose abortion do so because of lack of support. Not necessarily financial support, but lack of just support. Lack of a circle of friends or family that will come alongside of them and say, look, you're not going to be in this alone. Many folks don't have that. Many people will choose abortion because they don't have the finances in their mind to take care of a child. Many will choose abortion because the father of the child is, for lack of a better term, a deadbeat and has no desire to be a man and take care of his responsibilities. And so what the pregnancy center does, what our staff do, and what the work that we provide, the services that we provide, what that does is it comes in and looks at and takes that patient and says, we're going to be your support system. You don't have people around you walking you through this. We're going to help walk you through this. We're going to talk to you about what it means to be a mom. We're going to talk to you about what to expect. You know, there's that book. I don't know if it's a great book. I haven't read it, but there's a book out there called What to Expect When You're Expecting. Well, we're going to sit down with patients and say, here's what to expect while you're expecting. And also, once baby's here, here's what you need to do. Here's some assistance available for you. We're going to help them get on TennCare if need be, if they're here in the state of Tennessee. That's what we have. But we're gonna help them find the resources they need. We're gonna partner them and connect them with churches. We're gonna connect them with mentors. We're gonna do all of those things. If they come in and say, "Well, look, I just don't have the funds to take care of a child," well, we're gonna talk to them about what that looks like, and we're gonna walk through their budget. We're gonna talk to them about their budget and help in teaching them how to budget and prepare for a child. Again, we're gonna find resources. We're gonna partner with folks that will help them. Excuse me. And then also when we have folks come in and they say, look, the father of this child is a deadbeat and has no desire to step up, no desire to be a man, and no desire to take care of this child. We're going to talk to them about their identity. We're going to talk to them about who they are in Christ, not who they are in this deadbeat's eyes, but who they are in God's eyes, so that they will see what it means to truly be loved. So they will understand what it really means to have a man that cares about them, that sees them as more than a commodity. It sees them more than someone that can just simply produce something for them. And then we're going to have conversations with them about life in the womb. That this is life. Regardless of what society may say, what the abortion industry may say, what cable news may say, this isn't a clump of cells. This isn't just a blob of tissue. Science has advanced to the point now where we know without a doubt what is going on in the womb. We know when the heartbeat is there. We know when organs start to form. We know all of those things. And you'd be surprised. Because of that narrative that's been out there for so long, that it's a blob or a clump of cells or whatever you want to call it, an embryo. You know, they do everything they can not to call it a baby. But because that narrative has been out there for so long, you would be surprised at how many people, when they see an ultrasound, look at our nurses in disbelief as if, well, I was expecting this to be a blob. That's clearly a child. Why? Because the narrative has been painted for so long that this isn't a child, but the reality is very much different. If you've seen an ultrasound, you know it's very different. That's a baby. And so as we see the abortion numbers decline, there is time for a little bit of celebration. Now, we still have over 600,000 abortions occurring in this country, and that's concerning, certainly. But I think as the pro-life movement, we fail at times to celebrate the victories. This is a victory. Abortion numbers declining is a victory. And so they're going in the right direction. So let's partner with pregnancy centers. Let's partner with folks that are doing this work to come alongside of them and make sure these numbers continue to decline. And on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about some more reasons of what we're seeing in younger people today and why those numbers continue to decline. It's not just birth control. It's not just pregnancy centers, but it's other things that are playing a role in that number declining. We'll be back. So I thought I was going to go one direction after the break, and if I go that direction, I don't have enough time to continue in that. But I will say that one of the reasons why we're seeing abortion numbers decline is because young people are having less sex. And some of us may hear that and go, well, that's crazy. That's not true. It is true. Study after study is showing that even in today's society where we have Tinder and all these different apps, and we think we live in a very much hookup society, which in some aspects we may. The reality is there are a lot more people abstinent now, young people that are abstinent now than in years past, than in past generations. And so the reason for that is studies have shown that is because of the internet. So people are just staying on their phones, in a lack of social awareness, a lack of social intimacy, even the desire to be with another person is just not there because you have everything at your fingertips on your phone or on your computer. And so we lack that. We're seeing more and more young people who in generations past would be living on their own by now are still living at home with their parents. We see more and more people are not married, and so they're not. Many of us for a long time thought, well, the marriage number has declined because we have more couples living together outside of marriage. But the reality is that's not even the case. That number has not increased. What we're finding is many people are living on their own, not with a spouse, maybe living at home with their parents. And there's a number of reasons for that, financial stability or laziness or fill in the blank, what you want to see there. So there's a number of factors that play into why we see that abortion number decline. And so what we have to do as a pro-life movement, what we have to do as believers and as Christians is look at this and say, okay, what does this mean? It doesn't mean that that teaching abstinence is extreme. We should teach that. That is the only model that is 100% effective. Like when people look at me and say, well, abstinence doesn't work and why would you teach that? I'm going, well, we tell everybody to buckle up, but they don't buckle up. But we still tell them to buckle up because why? It's the safest thing to do. So it's crazy to not teach abstinence. We need to be teaching abstinence and saying, look, save yourself for marriage. That prevents STDs. That prevents early pregnancy. That prevents a lot of different things. Save yourself for marriage. And so it doesn't mean that we don't stop teaching that. What it means is, and it also doesn't mean that the abortion numbers are declining simply because we've been teaching that. It means we now live in a time and in a society, like I was saying, when I went to my father-in-law's for Thanksgiving, and I put the phone away because I couldn't get it to do anything because there was no service. That was freeing to me. But last night I'm at gymnastics watching my kids, and there was this middle school kid sitting in front of me, and he had his phone out, and I don't know what happened. I'm just being nosy and watching, and a mom walks over and takes his phone, and the kid loses his mind. Like, he's a middle schooler, and he's crying and slinging his book bag around and because his mom took his phone. So we're creating a society. We're creating a people that are addicted to their phones, so much so that they don't look anybody in the eye and have a conversation. So we lack intimacy, even with friendships, much less relationships, like intimate relationships with a partner. And so we now, as a society, as a Christian society, have to look and say, okay, not, and when I say a Christian society, our society is certainly not Christian, but we listening to this as Christians have to look at it, okay, in 2018, we have a lot more people that are attached to their phone and they are detached from real life. And I've written about it before and talked about it before, but we live in a time where people are seeking fantasy life. So fantasy football, fantasy games, all of these things, Fortnite, all of this fantasy stuff, instead of real life relationships. And so you ask somebody how many friends you have, and they're like, well, you know, 1,000 people follow me on Twitter. Well, how many friends do you have? Well, I have like, you know, 1,500 followers on Instagram. How many friends do you have? Well, I mean, you know, I have like 3,000 friends on Facebook. You see, that's where we are in today's culture. And so, yes, we celebrate the abortion number declining, but we also recognize, we also recognize that we have a broken culture, a culture that doesn't understand relationships anymore. And so it's not like generations past where they were all laying down with everybody, but it's now where not only they're not laying down with each other, but they're not even looking at each other. They're not even talking to each other. And so how do we step in? How do we change this? And the best place to start that change is in our own homes. So in my home, it's every single night we sit at the table and we have supper together. With no phones. Alexa may be playing Christmas music in the background. Or country music. But we're sitting there as a family. That's not easy. I have 4 kids and from 7 all the way to 2. Or I'm sorry, even lower, all the way to 10 months. And so it's not easy. The 10-month-old doesn't want to sit in the high chair. The 2-year-old doesn't want to eat. My 7-year-old is fussing with my 5-year-old. Important. It's important that they see mom and dad looking each other in the eye having conversations. It's important that I look at my son and have a conversation with him, looking him in the eye. It's important that he looks at his sisters and sees them as people, not looking through some screen. That doesn't mean that we're perfect. That doesn't mean that this past Saturday, my son and daughters sat in front of the TV for, 11, 12, all day long. But it means we have to be intentional in this. This is, everything is so easily accessed now that we feel the need, or we tend to tell ourselves we don't need anybody. Well, I don't need to be friends with people. I don't need to have real conversations. I can get everything that I want on my phone. And so for us, we have to look and see how we can do that. So how does that translate to the work that we're doing at Hope? That means when patients come in, we look them in the eye. We talk about their identity. Your identity cannot be in your social media feed. Your identity cannot be in your profile on your social media feed. Your identity cannot be something that's filtered 24/7. And so we have to have this conversation. And the fact of the matter is, we can go after as much as we want. We can talk about how bad millennials are and how lazy and how they're just the worst thing this country has ever seen. I am one of the millennials. Granted, I'm a millennial that's married and got 4 kids and drives a 12-passenger van. I'm probably a little bit different than most millennials. But if we don't recognize who raised up these millennials, then we're not being honest with ourselves. If we don't recognize we created a culture where we hand electronics to our children to get them to shut up and leave us alone, and recognize that when we do that, we are fostering up inside of them fantasy land, not real life world stuff. And frankly, I don't want my kids living in fantasy land. They can have imaginations, and they have great imaginations. But the real world is something we need to step into and understand is happening. That's going to create deeper relationships. Then when my children, my hope is when my children are going through tough times, they're not going to seek out respite from fantasy land. They're going to come to their dad and say, I'm going through a tough time and I need help. Those are the conversations we want to foster. So as we celebrate the number of abortions declining, we need to recognize that as a society, we're at a different place. The technological advances that we've seen just in 10 years is mind-boggling. And some studies have said that in the next 10 years, we're going to see 100 years worth of technological advances. So buckle up, folks. We need to get ready for this. Because, yes, it's great that they're not, all these people aren't laying down with each other anymore. But relationships are broke. Relationships aren't even desired. And so it's a fine line as we walk through that of not wanting to encourage intimate relationships outside of marriage, but also we want to encourage like deep, lasting relationships. Not sexual, but relationships where we're willing to look each other in the eye and have tough conversations and love each other well, without looking at a screen and doing it. When we come back, we're going to talk about some legislation that occurred in Mississippi. And I want to talk about the courts and the direction that we may see coming in the near future. We'll be back. Okay, so last week I was scrolling through Twitter, and the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is that's code word for the abortion industry, they tweeted this: breaking, Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban blocked. And then they had a quote: today's decision should be a wake-up call for state lawmakers who are continuously trying to chip away at abortion access. Such bans will not stand in a court of law. Nancy Northup, president and CEO of Reproductive Rights. And so Mississippi legislature, it looks like, passed a 15-week abortion ban, but then it was blocked. A federal judge blocked it. So that could make its way to the Supreme Court. I'm sure it'll be an appeal, and we'll see what happens. But I wanted to bring that up because When you read what they wrote, they act as if a 15-week abortion ban is extreme. They act as if a 15-week abortion ban is craziness, and we are just terrible people. Anyone that would want to see a 15-week abortion ban is awful and some right-wing zealot, nut job, extreme terrorist. That is what they would want you to believe. But I want to give you a snapshot of a 15-week-old in the womb. Okay, so at 15 weeks, a heartbeat is present. Organs have been formed, toes curl, the baby kicks, kidneys work, fingernails are present, brain impulses fire, baby sucks their thumb. They can sense light. And in some ultrasounds, sex can be revealed. So who's the extreme one? If we want to have a logical conversation on this, again, I'm not even trying to... I mean, I'm always trying to convince when we're having these conversations. But if I sat down with someone and just looked at them and said, at 15 weeks, now I just say somebody came from another country or even from another planet. They came here and we sat them down and said, okay, at 15 weeks in the womb, a heartbeat is present, organs are formed, toes can curl, baby will kick, kidneys work, fingernails present. The baby sucks his thumb. The baby can sense light. And in some ultrasounds, we can even determine sex of the baby. And then I looked at that person or that alien from outer space and said, should we be able to end the life of that baby? I would argue the vast majority of people would say, well, no. No, of course not. But yet, we live in a society where there is an organization. There are millions of dollars spent every single year to not only say at 15 weeks we should end the life, but there are people, there are even elected officials. One that ran for president, has run for president twice, and it says she may run again, who says that not only is it okay at 15 weeks, not only is it okay at 20 weeks, not only is it okay at 25 weeks, but they would go as far as saying the baby doesn't have any rights until it leaves the hospital. So even after it's born. But yet me, the guy that's pro-life from womb to tomb, the guy that's pro-life in every scenario, no exceptions, is labeled the extreme one. Now, I don't have any words. And so I'm not surprised that a federal judge blocked this legislation. I mean, what Roe v. Wade and then eventually in 1992, what Casey v. Planned Parenthood did was gave us a place of where we're going to be having this. You're going to have more conservative states slowly chip away. That's the way the decision came down. It allows for that. You have seen that across the board. You've seen the state of Tennessee. We have put in a 48-hour waiting period after an ultrasound. You have to wait 48 hours before you can have an abortion. We've seen some states implement a 20-week ban because it's a slowly chipping away. I mean, they can say that as like that's a negative thing, but what it is it's a population saying we need to protect our people. We need to protect our people. And when we say our people, that includes life in the womb. And so we can't flippantly talk about a 15-week old baby in the womb as if it's just a blob. But that's where we've come as a society. And you see, it's easy to do that. It's easy to do that when we see it as an issue and not see it as things that an issue that actually affects people. And so when we just throw out their 15-week abortion ban, we don't see an image bearer in the womb. We just say, yeah, it's a policy issue that we need to deal with or not deal with. But the refusal from people on both sides, frankly, to recognize that these decisions directly affect people, like actual human lives, not just baby in the womb, but also mom carrying the child, then we've made it into a game. And it's an unhealthy game. It's not one that anyone's going to win. And so what we have to do is be willing to have the conversations. And be willing to look at someone that would say, policymakers need to understand that this chipping away of abortion isn't going to happen on our watch. We need to look at them and say, do you understand what is going on in the womb at 15 weeks? Do you truly understand that? Because I would argue there's a lot of people that would say we shouldn't ban abortion at certain times that have no idea what's going on inside the womb, that have no idea the development of that child. We see in our experience at Hope that many people come in and they don't understand the development of a child outside of the womb. They'll say things like, my 8-month-old has an attitude. My 8-month-old is just mad at me. No, your 8-month-old's a baby. And all it knows is, hey, I pooped myself and I need somebody to change me. I'm going to cry until somebody does. And so if we don't understand the development of a child outside the womb, there's certainly a lot of people in our society that don't understand the development of a child inside the womb. And so we don't have to be hateful about it. We don't have to talk down to people. But we should never flippantly talk about this stuff. Because many of the abortions that occur in our society is because people don't really know about the life inside the womb. They don't understand the development. That's why ultrasounds are so effective. That's why when patients lay on the exam table at Hope and they see the ultrasound image on the flat screen on the wall, they go, oh my gosh, this is a baby. This is not just a blob. That's why 87% of those that see an ultrasound choose life at Hope Resource Center. Now, the other side, now the abortion industry will say, well, see, you're manipulating. That's what you're doing. No, we're not manipulating. We're being honest and transparent and saying this is what's happening inside of your body right now. And we're not going to apologize for that. If we're manipulating by showing the image, then I would argue the abortion clinic is manipulating by not showing the image. And guess what? They're not showing the image. Why are they not showing the image? Because they know. They know it'll make a difference. If we're manipulating by offering the services that we offer, then wouldn't the abortion clinic be manipulating by telling a patient, we'll give you an ultrasound, but you have to agree to an abortion. We're not going to give you an ultrasound if you're going to choose life. Doesn't that seem like an agenda is being pushed? If we're having an honest dialogue. You see, our goal shouldn't be just to see abortion ended. That's part of it. I long for that day. But our goal would be that people would see their value, that people would see the value of human life in the womb, out of the womb, and as we like to say, from womb to tomb. That's our pro-life ethic. There's no other way. Especially for Christians. I'm preparing for a church program that's coming up in the next few weeks. And I'm having to really go through John 1, verses 1 through 14. And the first part of that verse, it not only talks about that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, but it goes on to say that He is life, and that life is the light for men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So our Jesus, our God, is life. We see in Psalm that we were knitted together in our mother's womb. This for a Christian, now if you're a secular person listening, some of this may not make sense to you, but for a Christian, life is a precious gift. And the Lord chose to start our life and for us to develop inside of a womb, a separate, individual, never before made and never will be made again, life. And that's why we celebrate the lives that he's given to us. We'll be back. So as we finish up today's show, you know, I hope that when you walk away from any of these shows and in the conversations that we have, that we're shaping and shifting our focus to why we are pro-life, why we are against abortion. What are some things that we can do to not just be anti-abortion, but be pro-life, pro-woman, pro-family, pro-baby, all of those things are part of the work that we do. And so you can partner with us at Hope, and we certainly would appreciate that. It's year-end time, and so many of you might have received a year-end piece from us in the mail. If you want to learn more about that, we're going to be posting a blog this week concerning that. You can go to investinghope.com. You can click donate and partner with us there. We would certainly appreciate that. Also, some things coming up at Hope Resource Center in the next couple weeks that I wanted to announce to you, and we're going to talk more about it next week, is a big concert coming up on December 14th at 7 p.m. It'll be at One Life Church out the East Town campus. And Josh Loveless of Need to Breathe, he plays the keyboard for Need to Breathe. He also has his own album, a kids album called Young Folk and Friends. And so we're doing a Young Folk Christmas with Josh Loveless and friends. And it's going to be an amazing night at One Life. And we certainly appreciate their partnership and Josh's kindness to do that. Next Tuesday, if you want to listen live, I'm going to have Josh here in the studio, and we're going to talk about the concert, talk about the work that he's doing, talk about the upcoming Need to Breathe tour, the acoustic tour, the new album's out, everything going on. We'll talk about all of that next Tuesday, so you want to tune in live. If you can't listen live, of course, we'll have it up on the podcast at investinghope.com, iTunes, and wherever podcasts are found. But that's going to be a great concert. You can get your tickets at investinghope.com. Click on the Get Involved tab, and then Events, and boom, there you are, and you can get your tickets online. It's going to be an amazing night. Tickets range from $8 to $47. So we have VIP tickets, so you can have a meet and greet with Josh, which would be great. And we would really want you, we really appreciate your partnership and support in this. It's going to be a great concert. But also, it's just a way for every year at Christmas, I'm always looking for family things to do. We don't want to be over scheduled, but we do want to be, you know, at least in my family, we do want to have some Christmassy type things that aren't just lights and glamour, but also gospel, points us to the gospel and the amazing truth that Jesus is to us. And so this is a great opportunity. It's going to be very family friendly. And so bring your kids. We want to have them there as well. Buy your tickets online, investinghope.com, and come and join us on December 14th at 7 p.m. It's going to be a great night. We'll probably be there for an hour and 15 minutes. We won't take much of your night, but it'll be a good Christmas time concert right before a week before Christmas. We're looking forward to that. Again, thank you to One Life Church for hosting that. And of course, to Josh Loveless and his family for agreeing to be a part of that for us as well. So again, we appreciate your support. We appreciate you listening. I say this often, and at times it sounds cliche from a nonprofit guy to say this, but we really could not do what we do at Hope without your partnership and support. So I'm grateful that you listen to this show. I'm grateful that that we can have a role in helping shape the pro-life narrative. We're going to be I'll be talking about this in the future, but we're going to be going up again to Washington for the March for Life. I'm going to be part of a panel at a conference there, speaking about the work that we do as pregnancy centers and how we come alongside and partner with churches. So a lot of things happening, and all of that happens because you partner with us. And so we're grateful for that. The staff at Hope Resource Center is grateful for your partnership, as well as we're able to serve and love on the patients that come in our doors. So we thank you for that. Again, go to investinghope.com to learn more, read our blog, listen to the show, and of course, get your tickets for the concert that's coming up December 14th. We'd love for you to join us at One Life Church to hear Josh Loveless and friends for a young folk Christmas. We'll be back next week.